This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
A quick note before the show. This podcast contains explicit language. What is 21 Savage's American Dream? It's New Music Friday, and that's the question we're going to try to crack on this episode. We normally talk about brand new albums, but last week, after 5 years, one of hip-hop's most consistent stars returned, and there's a lot to unpack. I'm Sheldon Pierce, an editor at NPR Music. I'm joined by NPR Music's Sydney Madden and Rodney Carmichael. Hey, guys.
What up?
Sheldon, what's up?
Turn my headphone down a little bit. Yeah.
December of 2018, the Atlanta rapper released his last solo album, I Am Greater Than I Was.
Yeah.
But only 2 months later, he was taken into custody by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, an arrest that revealed to the public that he was a British national with an expired non-immigrant visa.
How much money you got? A lot. How much money you got? A lot. How many problems you got? A lot.
Now, he's back with American Dream. His first album since his arrest.
Bulletproof my car. Yeah. He a homebody. Name is yard. Yeah. Go to clubs and let down their guard. We got choppers out until we find somewhere to park.
We didn't know this record was coming, but it arrives suddenly with a ton of info, a trailer, a new video.
They ain't even giving me a name. Just number 21. Treated us like savages.
We're here to talk about the album, where it fits into the 21 story, and the expectations looming around that release. It feels like any conversation about the album has to start with the ICE arrest. What do you guys remember about that day?
I remember it being wild because the Super Bowl was in Atlanta that year. I was in D.C. at the time, but I just remember obviously it being huge news. The city, I mean, the world had come to Atlanta for this huge sports event, and one of the biggest rap stars of the city, definitely on a steep incline, got locked up. And this was a week before he was supposed to perform at the Grammys for the first time. So it was really like, what the hell is going on in Atlanta? You know, especially because we didn't know at the time that it was federal. I mean, we found out pretty quickly, but yeah, it was wild.
At that time, an ICE spokesperson told Rolling Stone that 21's whole public persona was false, sort of hinting at this idea that him being a British national somehow invalidated everything that he had rapped in his music up until that point, which had been known for being sort of first-person shooter-directed and very autobiographical. In the wake of that incident, his status remained up in the air for many years, and his case was postponed. And then finally, in October of last year, he confirmed he officially became a U.S. resident, and in touring London, celebrated a homecoming of sorts, if you could call it that. There are questions amidst all that of what the American Dream means today. The intro with 21's mom sort of makes clear that this is in part a response to that initial perception of him being born in Britain, erasing the Atlanta trap lineage. Sydney, I'm curious what you made of that response and what it says about our understanding of authenticity in rap.
So the ideology of the American Dream, I feel, has changed so much from 21's mom's generation to his own. So she's from Dominica, which is one of the countries that was under one of the former British West Indies. So you have like Jamaica, Bahamas, St. Lucia. You go to these spaces and you feel the remnants of that colonization, whether it's on the faces on the money or the national holidays you get off or the social structures that are in place that allow you to have pathways and communities solidified in the UK. I mean, it's not a coincidence that there's almost a million documented Jamaicans in London alone, right? So making the migration path to the UK and to the US involved a lot of communal structures, but also a lot of sacrifice. And as someone who is a child of a Caribbean immigrant myself, like, you gonna hear about the sacrifice, right?
Yeah.
And I think the ICE arrest, like I was saying, it made it known to fans that he was British in a way that almost ripped it away from his own personal narrative. Like, it thrust him into being this face and this almost this martyr for the ICE immigration that's going on in this country in the last few years in the wake of this happening. I would argue that now, at 31 years old, to be able to leave the country and move freely outside of the U.S., that is really what symbolizes a lot more of the American dream for him, you know? Like, to leave. Yeah. To not be under such constraints and pressure and constant surveillance and kind of hiding in plain sight in a way that he has been for so long. So, yeah, having that green card and being able to move freely, it's kind of the inverse of what his mother's generation thought the American dream would mean and would be.
Being able to escape America. Yeah, that's an interesting American dream, no doubt.
I think it's one that more people occupy than ever. With the police state we're living under here, and I mean, this is not to say the grass is greener everywhere, but I feel so much of what he talks about in this album, losing so many friends, only having photos or like memories of joking with his friends, looking around and not being able to trust people because he doesn't have that support system he once had, you know, figuring out how cheap it is to get a gun in his area and what that power can mean, what that violence can mean. But I still cry with nobody around. He even talked about on Dark Days having suicidal thoughts. But I'd be lying if I said it haven't crossed my mind. These are all consequences of him living in the incredible inequality and inequity that is very uniquely American and is what a lot of American systems run off of. So I feel naming the album American Dream is kind of this satirical strategy to show its inverse effect.
To your point, Sydney, there's a lot of sort of underlying paranoia in a lot of these raps. You would think with a title like American Dream that he would sort of lean a little bit heavier into maybe the rags to riches story that he has lived. I mean, it's in some of the bars, but I think honestly, there's probably less flexing on this record than previous records. He seems sort of intent on at least pointing to everything that he has had to endure in his transition to America, in growing up here, in being an immigrant, learning the ways of his community. He is an American and he knows what it means to suffer here. The idea that he has somehow not experienced the American struggle and the American dream simply because his parents are from somewhere else is to totally erase everything that his music is really about, I think. The album was announced with a short film that featured the Stranger Things star Caleb McLaughlin and Donald Glover, weirdly, as 21. In a movie trailer style album teaser. Nobody seemed to know if it was a real movie or if it was promo for the record. We reached out to 21's reps for comment and they didn't respond. Whether it's for an actual movie or simply a preview of what the record would be, and despite the like almost surrealist idea of Donald playing 21, who is like 10 years his junior, in like this flashback, the video is serious in tone and it feels like an origin story of sorts with scenes from his immigration battle. Do you all feel like the music on this record is in line with the sort of biopic feel of those visuals?
Not really. I think there is a certain expectation with the title and with that trailer. if that's what it is, that there would be some sort of origin story vibe to it. But I mean, maybe it's his whole discography that we have to rely on for that, you know, because a lot of that has, well, besides the immigration part of his origin story, a lot of his East Side, Atlanta, Decatur, Glenwood story has been in his music, you know, has animated his music and his persona as an artist. So we don't get as much of that as might be expected by the title, which is an interesting choice. I'm still trying to parse why and what that means. But yeah, I think there is a little bit of schism between the expectation and what we end up getting because of that.
Yeah, I really thought going into it with the title and with that, are we calling it a trailer? There was going to be more overt mentions of the last few years of the immigration story infused. But then I kind of started, as I'm listening to it, I'm kind of starting to question my own expectation and my own presumptions in that. Because it reminded me of in 2018 when Meek Mill, in the wake of his probation violation and so much rallying around him for that, a lot of people started to look to him as a criminal justice reform advocate, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of thrust upon him that he was now a face, a figurehead, a beacon, when really he was just the rule and not the exception. The only exception was that he was famous. He had a rap career, right?
Yeah.
I think it feels a lot similar to that. It's like, yeah, 21 is meeting with his lawyers however times, on the weekly, on the daily, on the monthly. He's doing everything he needs to do in terms of touring within his parameters in the U.S. and whatever stipulations are upon him to get his green card. And then he's like, all right, that period is over. Like, that's really, I'm doing what I need to do. I'm not becoming a spokesperson for everything that's happening with the immigrant struggle in the U.S. right now. That's what it really feels like to me. I think there's a lot of other moments of sequencing and cohesion that bring this album together, like the amount of soul and R&B samples that kind of ground a lot of his grittier stuff, a lot of his grittier lines. It really sounds like he's having a lot of conversations with himself so much because how I mentioned before, so many people around him are not physically in his space anymore. Like, he's lost so many friends, so many brothers. And I mean, there's moments in here that you can clearly tell are trying to be like a pop radio swing. I would say those aren't the brightest spots on the album, but I don't think the through way of his struggle to quote unquote become American is as necessary as what I thought it was when I was going into it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, he, in throughout his records, has always, there's always a line here or there that he slips in where it's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of going through it. And there are subtle references to his situation. There's a reference to spending $500,000 on dismissals. There's a lot of times where he makes explicit, like, I can't remember him saying the words grew up on the East Side more than he does on this record. There's at least like four different songs where it's like in the hook.
I grew up on the East Side where it's dangerous fast.
And there's an explicit reference to his green card situation and a threat to sort of take out anybody who keeps bringing up where he was born, as if that like sort of defines his story. I'm wondering, where do you all think this album fits into his discography? I've always sort of been partial to the Savage Mode stuff because I feel he and Metro have this incredible chemistry. They work really well together. But as far as solo albums, I Am Greater Than I Was seemed to represent such a huge leap for him as a rapper and an artist, I felt. It seemed like he had such command over what he wanted his sound to be and how he wanted to present his story to the world on that record. And after 5 years, I'm not sure he makes the same strides on this record. It feels like very definitively like a 21 Savage album, for better and for worse. But I'm curious what you guys make of this as a part of his career arc.
I mean, I think that, I think he's made better albums. I think I'm kind of torn between his first studio album and his second. That It's an Album was really strong to me. There's still some of my favorite songs on there, like Numb, Nothing New.
Another nigga made the news, ain't nothing new.
And in a lot of ways, when you listen to this album, like Sid mentioned, there are some pop strides happening on this album that, you know, feel a little hit or miss. He doesn't sound as menacing as he used to sound, you know, and that used to be like his calling card. Like, he was probably the most menacing sounding, you know, artist in rap, you know, at a particular point in time. He sounded, he kind of had that dead eye glare and you know, the knife tattoo on the on the forehead. You know what I'm saying? It's a knife.
It's a knife. But I ain't got no yard rock in my lap. Everywhere I'm scrap. Most these rappers cap. I ain't giving doubt. Glenwood to the flat. Used to rob and trap. Money top shack. Chopper bullets.
You know, and a lot of ways it felt often like when you listen to 21 that he was numb, you know, like that was kind of his aesthetic in a lot of ways. And it almost sounds like he's, in some ways, you know, he's enjoyed an amount of success and probably distanced himself from a lot of the trauma that he experienced growing up. You know, a lot of that trauma that's really heavy in his discography early on through those early mixtapes,
yeah,
through those
recent
first couple of albums where he's literally talking about everything he survived growing up off of Glenwood or growing up over here in Decatur. He's put enough distance between who he was then and who he is now. And you can see it, honestly, when you see images of him now, you know, you see the you know, his hair's grown longer, and you know, I don't know if the knife tattoo is still there, if it's covered up by the locks, or if it's, you know, if he, I don't know, you know what I mean? But that's not the image of vibe you get. You don't get that dead-eyed glare from 21 Savage anymore, and you don't hear that same numbness or that same menace in his voice either, which is a good thing. But it means for him as an artist, how do you evolve into something different when that's kind of the persona that you created for yourself? You know, it's the classic question in hip hop, right? Like, you know, do we care if Jay-Z is rapping about anything other than being a street hustler? You know, how do you evolve and grow with the genre, especially a genre that on mainstream level has become so narrow in terms of what is, you know, accepted or acceptable as, like, you know, a good storyline or a good persona and that kind of thing. So even though I'm not really connecting like that with this album right now, I do like that he seems to be coming out of some of that darkness that really, you know, that really pervaded and, you know, it was just really heavy in his early stuff. But I do think that trying to figure out where he goes from here and what kind of how his persona evolves from here is going to be something that we're going to have to keep watching for, and he's going to have to, you know, keep showing us.
He has become a hip hop superstar in the last 5 years. The controversy and getting caught up in this arrest being one of the building blocks of that, right? And to your point, Rodney, about not feeling the dead-eyed, menacing, like, numbness in a way, it's like when you become, when you get to that level, like, some of those edges get buffed out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
him going to Aliante is a regular Tuesday now when it used to be goals. You know what I'm saying? And with new levels, of course, come new devils all the time. But I think he's in a moment where there is that distance from the trauma, which is what you can hear in some of him being more observant and forward facing to these things now versus when he was, you know, just recently going through it. It would be real quick and like real, this is what made me cold hearted. You know, I think it comes with not only getting older and maturing, but also the level of success that he's been able to attain for himself. Even if it doesn't have that same calling card that his earlier tapes had, it actually is a blessing to grow out of that space, you know, as a human being, as a person. And now the space he occupies is one of the most prominent, most respected rappers, most respected voices in hip hop. So that's why when he's dropping songs like Letter to My Brother, which is addressing Thug and one of the biggest cases happening right now in hip hop, it's one of those things that make people, all of hip hop, stop and listen.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Once you cross that line, it ain't no trying to fix it. You want me to forgive you, let's be realistic. I can't kick it with your kind like I tore my meniscus. How you go from cold offending to a witness? They'll stand on couches with you but won't stand on business.
Yeah, I mean, there's a line towards the literal end of the record which seems to like sum up the place he's in, where he's like, this is what growth looks like. No more committing crimes. I made a way for us. And I think it's sort of hard to maintain that menace when you are so clearly seeking comfort and seeking solace. Like, there's only so long you can stay like active on edge and ready to jump at a moment's notice before that gets to you. That's a tense state of affairs. And I think now he is clearly trying to make strides to move in a more comfortable direction. It feels a bit like he knows what a 21 Savage album is supposed to do. And so he's like, all right, I'm going to deliver a 21 Savage album for you guys. But also, like, I live in comfort now. I know what the good life feels like. So I'm a little bit more relaxed. And also, you know, I mean, there are lines like where he's like, I hurt on the inside and I still act fine. I think that's a part of it too. Like, constantly sort of bearing the weight of your pain for the public at all times is difficult. I mean, there's another line about that early on where he's like, it's hard to put pain in these raps. He says something along those lines. And it's like, he's been doing this for a long time now. He's still young, but I mean, he's what, like almost eight, nine years in. So it's hard to stay in that same mode forever. I commend him for, you know, as Sid said, trying to move more in the pop lane. He's trying to step over. He's like, okay, I know what you guys want, but there is also something that I need as I move forward from this. Some of this feels like a transition for him. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he does going forward.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about, but we are gonna take a quick break.
21. This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Lagunitas Brewing Company, Since 1993, Lagunitas has been challenging the status quo, brewing innovative beer, and crafting stories along the way. Featuring a wide range of craft brews, cult classics, and non-alcoholic options, there's a seat at the bar for everyone. Bring the dog, too. Lagunitas Brewing Company, because every great song deserves a great beer. It's good to have friends. Learn more at Lagunitas.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor CarMax. CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because CarMax believes you shouldn't just settle for a car, you should love your car. That's why every car they sell has CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. Don't settle, find love at first drive. Start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on every purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Instead of scrolling mindlessly, engage mindfully with the NPR app. With a mix of on-demand news, stories from this station, and your favorite podcast, you can relax without shutting off your brain. Download the NPR app today.
We're back. We're here to talk about 21 Savage's American Dream. There were, as we've talked about, a lot of expectations on this one. I know, Rodney, you've talked about this. Going through what 21 went through in the wake of the ICE arrest and the trial, some of that, he's felt like he was targeted in that operation that they said was about nudie. But, you know, I think asking some of the things that listeners might be asking of 21, like, in the wake of that, speaking truth to power, being really autobiographical, touching on like the political nature of his story, might be a tough sell when the federal government is bearing down on you.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's something worth thinking about when we think about a lot of these really huge public trials that these artists go through. We celebrated a lot when it dropped.
How much money you got? A lot. How many problems you got? A lot.
You know, when the performance and the video and he threw these lines in, this was all part of the growth that we were crediting 21 with at the time. It's like, wow, he's expanding his repertoire. Wow, he's doing a song with J. Cole. Wow, yeah. It's kind of like a conscious 21 song. What? The stuff that I seen got me traumatized. Next thing you know, he drops a line about immigrants in the song and you know, he's getting hemmed up by ICE, yeah. You know, like a week later. So going through something like that, you know, and having, you know, secured a certain level of freedom now, naming this album American Dream. What exactly do you want to do with that freedom? Do you want to continue to, you know, write the kind of rhymes that make the feds, you know, want to come for you? Do you continue to feel like speaking truth to power, or, you know, what have you, is the thing to do? Or is it like, man, hey, I got the freedom to live comfortably now. I got the freedom to distance myself from the authorities who've been chasing me all my life now. I think that is worth considering the kind of sacrifices that come along with expecting an artist to bear the brunt of that kind of responsibility, you know, and especially an artist like 21 who wasn't, you know, a political artist in any kind of overt way to begin with. You know, it's interesting. I think, you know, back in the day, Public Enemy, Chuck D used to call, you know, rap, you know, Black America, CNN, you know, it was like reporting the news. But at a certain point, it feels like there was a transition that happened with hip hop to the point where instead of reporting the news, like artists became the news. Artists were living the news. Like you could see what was happening in our communities based on the what you heard in the music, right? Like we became casualties of whatever was happening in our communities. And so when you have an artist like 21 who's a survivor, but very much in some ways a casualty of, you know, the crack era and the violence that, you know, has continued to plague certain communities, you know, being able to survive that and being able to get as far away from that as possible and get your people as far away from that as possible, you know, that might be American dream enough. Like, he might not feel like he needs to be some kind of flag bearer for a certain kind of truth or a certain kind of political pushback, because it obviously comes with a cost, you know, and that's a cost that he's paid over the past 5 or 6 years. And it's a high cost to ask of anybody.
I'm with you. I don't think it's the artist's responsibility to be an activist. And I also don't think it's an artist's responsibility to, like, share the most private parts of their life with their public if they don't want to. But I do sort of sympathize with any fan who sort of roll out to this record and expected to hear a different record than they got. Because 21 is clearly an album artist. He is definitely purposeful in every decision that he has made in his career. And from album one to album two, there was such clear growth. You have a 5-year delay between the last album and this album, and so much has happened in his life between those two albums. And then you get this album, and it's not much different from the last album. In fact, you could argue that it is in some ways a regression from the last one, because the last one was so rich and so punchy at times. And I will say there is a nature of storytelling that could have been found in this immigration story, sort of, that could have maybe potentially elevated this record in a way that it currently doesn't move. He could have found another aspect of himself in that side of his story. And I think maybe there's an argument to be made that the music suffers because he isn't willing to go there. I'm not angry that he didn't go there. But you always want an artist to sort of push themselves, and that feels like a space that he could have mined maybe a bit better. But, you know, with that said, there is one song in particular on this record that is so clear and concise in that way. Sydney, you mentioned it. It's Letter to My Brudda. It's the second verse is sort of 21 at his most heartfelt and vulnerable. Rodney, I know this song stuck out to you. He has always displayed a sort of subtle sensitivity. Here there are sort of references to the friend Johnny that he lost in his teens and his mother having to shop for clothes off the racks at TJ Maxx. What are you hearing here when you listen to this record?
Yeah, this is, like you said, the best part of 21 Savage to me. That's the thing about dude, is he does have this, he on the surface, he is this, always been kind of this menacing artist who, you know, seemed to be always projecting himself as the person committing the violence versus being a victim. But when you listen deeply, especially every now and then, he has a song where the vulnerability is right there on top. You know what I mean? And you realize that he's as much a victim as he is a villain, or as he portrays himself to be a villain. And this is one of those joints, you know, like Numb from it's a album, man. Like, you can just hear him telling like survivor stories, and there's a certain amount of survivor's guilt that goes along with it. And obviously, you know, the first half of that song is him, you know, speaking pretty directly but indirectly to everything that's going on in the YSL trial here in Atlanta, you know, in terms of Young Thug and Gunna, because he talks about what it's like to trade on your brother and you know, these are a lot of the street allegations, the cultural allegations that Gunna's facing. So it's hard to hear that first verse and not immediately think of anybody other than that, even though he never actually says anybody's name.
His album, just in terms of like what came out this week or what came out last week, or what has come out so far in the world of hip hop, like it's the biggest album so far this year, right? And to address directly / indirectly the, Rodney, as you were saying, the cultural implications of how hip hop, a lot of the culture is divided on Gunna's validity in this case right now, like whether or not he did snitch or whether he, like there's a line, how you go from a co-defendant to a fucking witness, they'll stand on couches, but they won't stand on business. Like that's very clear. And Thug dropped an album late last year. And he has a verse on this album too. It's very clear that there's, in this verse specifically, there are lines being drawn in the sand. You know, they're literally being put on record, put on wax for everyone to know, for everyone to catalog and hear. The fact that he has Mariah the Scientist on one of the last songs on the album, Mariah the Scientist, who is the partner currently of Young Thug, like, it's very clear that allegiances and sides are being picked here, and for him to do it on an album that he knows is gonna get a lot of eyes and ears on it, I think that's telling of where the rest of this year is gonna go and how hip-hop is going to digest and continue to debate the validity of not only the case, but where Gunna's allegiances are.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a big deal.
Even as he continues, to your point, to move into a new strata, that he still finds himself like grappling with what is like maybe street level ethics. The YSL RICO trial has been the biggest ongoing story, not in only in Atlanta rap, but in wider rap. But there, it's in a way, it's a microcosm of another war sort of being waged against rap lyrics in court, which is there are a lot of Young Thug songs being played in his trial, sort of being used to convict him as this gang leader and killer. And those lyrics are being taken at face value. And here on this record, 21 is clearly thinking of his stuff in that broader context. I mean, on Dark Days, he raps,
heard they liking love for what they put in rhymes, standing on it, I'm still writing mine.
Heard they locking up niggas for what they put in a rhyme, standing on this shit, fuck it, I'm still writing mines. And, you know, it's interesting to think of 21's music in this context specifically, because he is, as we've talked about, an autobiographical rapper who really puts himself at the center of all of his narratives. But in December, he told Rolling Stone that his lyrics are mostly fiction, that, you know, it's some based on real life, but it's a lot of, as he put it, creative stories. And, you know, that kind of hedging to sort of like prevent self-incrimination when you've spent so much of your music on the front foot, and even in this verse are saying that you're standing on what you write, is sort of interesting. I'm curious, how do you hear his lyrics with all of that in mind?
I mean, see, this is partly what I'm thinking about too, in terms of what we feel is maybe lacking from the album, right? Because the truth is, we don't know exactly everything that went down in this immigration case. We don't know exactly what, you know, his and his lawyer's narrative was in defense. We don't know exactly what the timelines were. We heard a lot of speculation early on publicly about his timelines in terms of when he came here the first time, and, you know, whether he went back at some point and then came again. It's interesting that as thorough as that Rolling Stone profile is, and it's a great profile, by the way, it just really shows so much about where he is mentally, and it's just a lot of other pieces in there that I really love. It doesn't get super detailed in terms of fleshing out his timeline in terms of, you know, when he came to America and how long he was here, or if he went back at some point and came back again. And so to me, the fact that we don't hear 21 going into super detail himself about all of that stuff, it's just like, hey, yeah, you know, I was born over there, now I'm over here, I grew up over here, I'm east side all day, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, right. And then on top of that, we hear all of this, you know, they're using your lyrics against you. You know, what have you. It's like, okay, this stuff is probably still ongoing to a certain extent. I mean, statute of limitations, I don't know what that is on immigration cases, but we know a whole lot of former drug dealing rappers. You know, Jeezy, he just released his memoir late last year, finally telling all of his stories pre-BMF and during the BMF years. And he said, literally, it was about statute of limitations. He didn't want to talk about a lot of that stuff, even though he would reference it heavily autobiographically in his music. You know, he wasn't trying to give up specific stories and details and people and connections and timelines, you know. So the fact to me that we don't hear more of that in this album, but that he's super aware that people other than hip hop fans are listening and taking notes. I mean, I'm just kind of putting two to two together and assuming that that might have a little something to do with it.
Exactly. It's giving New Levels, New Devils. It's giving media training. And right. It's truly an act of self-preservation, because also within that ambiguity, that's that also breeds the questions that makes you want to lean in and like more enticing as a fan. So him walking the line between fact and fiction so much, that's what makes you go in and like, I was about to say print out the lyrics, but we don't print out lyrics anymore, y'all. We don't have the booklets anymore. You know, that's what makes you go on Genius and look at what all those double entendres mean. Like, that's what has people in the chat. You know, it gets the people going. I think that's very much still part of the appeal. I think it's a great point you made, Rodney, about statute of limitations. I think, yeah, when he's on his truly fully insulated, fully free victory lap, when he's, you know, put in the OG category, that's when we'll hear a lot of the stories come out. But I think he's still, as someone who, like I said, like I've said before, is newly minted in this superstar status, he knows what it's going to cost to stay there and to stay safe in there. And that comes with, you know, being a little sly, being a little tongue-in-cheek sometimes, and yeah, hella media training so that the timeline isn't as concrete as, you know, some ops would like.
Yeah, the right to remain silent is there to protect you as a defendant. So, I mean, it makes sense that he would lean into that. It's also like, setting the record straight for the public, it that cuts through the mystery.
Yeah. Cut the bullshit.
I mean, so much of what is interesting about a lot of 21 songs is he's like this skulking, shadowy figure moving through them. And leaning into that sort of villain characterization, part of it is being masked up. It's being unidentifiable. It's being the dude rounding the corner before you even know what hit you. There's very sort of horror movie vibes to a lot of it. And I think about Without Warning, which like leaned specifically into that. It was released on Halloween. It had a lot of sort of spooky samples. And so like that is the 21 charm is wrapped up in all of that. And I think it's sort of important for him to always lean into that. Maybe the time will come when he will feel the need to divulge all that he has sort of gone through in his life. He's lived a very interesting life, obviously, but when he decides to tell that story should be entirely up to him. American Dream is out now on Epic Records. My thanks to Rodney Carmichael and Sydney Madden.
No doubt. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Sheldon.
When I first got here, they ain't even giving me a name. Just number 21. Treated us like savages.
That's it. That's your name. Savage 21.
21 Savage.
American Dream is already out, but there's a ton of new music that came out today, January 19th. And here's just a handful of albums from some NPR music favorites. The punk icons of Sleater-Kinney completed their new album, Little Rope, after a deadly car accident involving Carrie Brownstein's mother and stepfather. Brownstein and her bandmate, Corin Tucker, found catharsis in carrying on with the recording, which wrestles with grief. MacArthur Fellow Mary Halverson, a jazz guitarist known for her improvised and experimental compositions, reconnects with her sextet Amaryllis for Cloudward, music of optimism inspired by the gradual pandemic reopening. After 4 years, Green Day returns with its 14th album, Saviors, which the band describes as a laugh at the pain, weep in the happiness kind of record. With two EPs under her belt, the country singer-songwriter Brittany Spencer, an alum of the Baltimore School for the Arts, finally makes her debut with My Stupid Life, depicting an artist embarking on a post-therapy emotional cleanse. After scrapping an early version recorded in an LA studio, the pop-punk band Neck Deep recorded its new self-titled album by themselves at home in Wrexham, and its title hints at its DIY charms. In the words of the frontman Ben Barlow, they're not trying to be anything they're not. Pianist and composer Ethan Iverson leads two different trios on Technically Acceptable, which features new originals along with performances of Roberta Flack's Killing Me Softly with his song and Thelonious Monk's Round Midnight. And for his first album since 2017, the trumpeter Keon Harold, who has become a not-so-secret weapon for big-time artists like Jay-Z, Beyoncé, Rihanna, Eminem, and Maxwell, steps back into the spotlight with Forever Love.
Look at the sun shining. Why don't you just let the sunlight in? I know you've been hurting. So just let the sunlight in.
That'll do it for New Music Friday. The show is produced by Joaquin Kotler with editorial support from Jacob Gans. We'll be back next week. I'm Sheldon Pierce. Take care.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.